My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be. To be.
It's the Eye on the Illini podcast. This is part two with former Illini team photographer Mark Jones.
Makovic was kind of the general, you know.
And yeah. Oh,
he knew the business stuff. What was Zook like?
With Coach Zook, he wanted to get a photo. We're at the Rose Bowl. He wants to get a photo bad of Juice and to show that, you know, that we're in Southern California, we're playing football, and that how beautiful it is out here. So he wanted mountains in the background. The only mountains in the background around there is coastal mountains, you know. They're not your Grand Tetons. We were on our way to Universal, and all of a sudden, the bus comes to a screeching halt, and Zook goes, Jonesy, get up here with your camera. So I go up there, and he's got Juice. He goes, there's those mountains I want in the background. My God, there weren't mountains in the background.
Host Mike Kegley gets a candid conversation with so many Illini memories, we had to put this one into two parts. Now, let's get right to the show.
We're here with Mark Jones, the official photographer of Illini Sports. This is Mike Kegley, one of the Illini guys, and we are continuing a discussion that we've had. And now we're talking about some of the great teams that Mark has been able to be up close and personal with, take photos of, talk to the guys. And right now we're talking about the Flying Illini. So there's obviously these guys you knew. And you still are friends with 30 years later. So tell us a little bit, give us a few stories and a flavor for what these guys were all about and what it was like covering them.
You know, these guys were in 88, 89, even though they were the best team that Illinois had, had in years and years, these guys were so friendly to people like me who was just coming on the scene. And of course, they had never had photos taken like I took, because I was using a Hasselblad camera. I was using 2 1/4, 2 1/4 negative, and that way the photos could enlarge up to at least 16x20, be super sharp, super clear, and they had never had photos taken of themselves like that before. So that was also part of it, because they'd seen those photos. But the very first photo I showed it to Kent Brown. It's one of Kenny Battle going up to. And he's dunking the ball in early in the season, the 88-89 season. And I showed it to Kent. And Kent says, you know, Kenny might want to see this. I said, you think so? He goes, yeah. So I took it down there, and Kenny looked at it. And he says, man, that is great. That is great. How much he's run? And I told him. And he said, here you go. And that was the start of it. And after that, every single player on that team wanted photographs that I had taken, mainly because technologically they were so much better than anything you could take with a 35 millimeter. It was just so much better at the time.
You realize, Mark, that you owe me money.
I do?
Yes, because now I know why Kenny never had any, and then I would have to buy him beers up at campus when he'd come up, because, you know, he'd be standing next to you. And when you'd go up to the bar to get a drink, the bartender would look at you and I'd go like one or two, whatever I needed. And then Kenny'd be right there. And all of a sudden he'd have his hand up and I'm like, yeah, get him one too. And now I find out he didn't have any money because he was buying all your photographs.
Well, he bought one.
You weren't ready for that, were you?
No, but I like it, because I always had to buy him whiskey instead of just beer. So he like that. Anyway,
that was a long time ago.
That was a long time ago. We could have we go to Blimpies or whatever, you know. It was a lot of fun. Anyway,
when they were playing Georgia, you had a Georgia Tech story that you were going to tell.
Oh yeah, too. The Georgia Tech story, sure. That was how I kind of got started photographing these guys. And that actually, that first photo I took a battle, that was from 87, 88.
Okay.
Because that was really the first year. That was his first year at Illinois, because he transferred over. Right. So So we're playing Georgia Tech, and we're at a stage of the season. You know, it's January, I think, maybe February. But anyway, we're playing them. If we win this game, we're number one in the country. And Georgia Tech had a good team that year. And it was late in the game, and we were down by one. And we were down by two. So we're down, the clock's ticking down, and we're down in regulation, and we shoot, and Georgia Tech gets a rebound, and they can pretty much just kill the clock now. Except the one guy who got the ball decides to make a long pass to a wide open Georgia Tech player on the other end of the court. Kenny Battle, but it was never completed because Kenny Battle jumped up when the guy threw the ball, and I swear he had springs in his legs. He grabbed that ball, came down, said thank you, and went right back up and slammed that baby home with the most thunderous dunk any of us had ever seen. And we're all looking at each other along the end line there going, did he just say thank you? Is that what he said? Yeah, that's what he said. That tied the game, and that put it in regulation, and then we won it in overtime.
Yeah,
that was one of my first experiences with hearing something on the floor that really no one else would have ever heard, except unless you were sitting right there. It was a different world. When they make a shot, you know, when they go up for a shot, everything goes quiet. You know, if the home team's shooting, everything goes quiet in there. And then there's a pause. And if the shot goes in, there's a tremendous roar. And if not, that pause kind of continues. Well, and that's what was going on. That's why it was so quiet. And then everyone saw the guy was open the other end. The Georgia Tech guard was throwing. The guy had a layup. And Battle jumps up and grabs that ball. And I got a photo of that, which I'll send to you. It just jogged my memory just not too long ago. And it was, his elbow is almost even with the top of the rim is how high he was.
Yeah, he was. Anyway, he was amazing because you could find him every once in a while. He would go to IMPE building.
Oh, yeah.
And he would go dunk for like an hour. I mean, I have no idea. I've never seen anybody who could do that and not lose his steam, but. He just had endless amounts of athleticism and energy, and you could understand why he was a nightmare for other teams to deal with because of his, he just seemed like he had no buildup of lactic acid to get tired.
That's right. You know, I'll send you a number of photos. Actually, Beth went through the photos the last several days as well, and she found ones that I had forgotten about, and, that makes it even more interesting, of course, like the one of Jordan and Gil together. That was one I kind of forgot about, but the thing with Kenny is that he was so gifted, not just gifted physically, but he was gifted mentally. He knew the game of basketball so thoroughly. And he was he knew that Georgia Tech player was going to throw that ball long, even though he did not look at the court behind him, but he knew he was going to throw that ball long, and he just jumped straight up and grabbed it. Thank you.
What did now? Obviously, you know, Kenny was one of the great ones on that team. Mm-hmm. Did you have many dealings with Nick Anderson, because he was such a tough guy out there? And he was such a no-nonsense guy. Did you get a chance to meet him, or was he like that?
Oh, yeah, because he told me I took the best pictures of him he ever had taken. I said, well, Nick, I appreciate that, but I'm the only one out here taking pictures for you, let alone with a 2.25 camera, which gives you a far superior image. And so I'd take the photos into him, and then I'd have an extra stack there that I need to get signed, and I told Nick, I said, I hope you don't mind me signing, I hope you don't mind me asking you to sign these photos, because they're for friends of mine. And he goes, you give me a photo of me doing this, I'll sign as many photos as you want, Mark. I said, okay, I appreciate that, I surely do. That was always before the head coach got there. I had to be out of the locker room by the time the head coach got there.
Right.
Let me tell you another story about this 89 team. At the beginning of the 88-89 season, they wanted some photos. Sports Info wanted some photos taken inside in the locker room, you know, during an exhibition game at halftime. I said, okay. And, you know, one thing I've always been good at is being discreet. And when things are quiet and the coach is making a point, you don't jump around and take photos or be any kind of a distraction. And right. So he was making a point. We didn't play very well in the first half. And I was standing behind Stephen Bardo. And, of course, Coach Henson never swore. But when he pointed out to Stephen some of the errors he felt that, or some of the things Stephen was not doing, like guarding and passing and whatever else, I'll tell you what, I was standing behind Stephen and I could feel you just start to kind of shrivel up and wish you were anywhere but in that place, because I am getting nailed. I could feel it. And of course it was directed at Steve. And you know, Bardo played a lot better game in the second half and we won easily.
But yep.
To me, that is the essence of a great, great coach. Now, Dick Nagy, on the other hand, I learned more profanity, and how to string profane words together to make sentences out of verbs and adjectives and pronouns and anything. He was a master of the rhetoric of profanity. He was just, the refs couldn't team up because I don't think he understood what he was saying to him, because it was almost like a novel, you know,
Coach Henson hired him because he knew that maybe there was a gap in his own game. So you bring in Dick and it's like, hey, he closes the gap in the whole profanity.
Between the players and the refs, he was really hard on the officials. I watched Dick do first game I ever shot, Dick does a pirouette over on the sidelines because the play was a pretty bad call. And I'd never seen a coach do a pirouette on a court. This was after stamping his feet. And he always wore shoes that they were like Cuban heeled, hollow. And it sounded like a snare drum going off. And then he did that to get the officials' attention too. But he was a master at it. And he was a heck of a good fella. And I think he handled the car dealers, the cars over at Miles. I think he helped Miles Chevrolet out with I think that was one of his jobs back in those days. But now, those guys are really great. And, you know, they all came back in that reunion they had the year before the pandemic. You know, so that would have been, 2019? Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, they came back then. Every single player, every manager, every coach came back. And Rod Cardinal is the one who set that up. And that was amazing after all these years, because you're always going to miss, you know, someone's going to be gone or can't make it or doesn't want to come back or has passed. But they were all there and it was just great. And then for some reason, they decided to have me walk out with them. They must have been low. Must have had somebody not show up. Send a photographer. I think Gary Bruner and I went out. He was a senior manager. I think he and I went out. But no, it was great fun.
Anyway. Now, that team, now we also had Kendall Gill.
Yes.
And of course, now you see him on the media up in Chicago. Mm-hmm. You got Stephen Bardo, who does Big Ten games.
And Stephen is sharp. Games. He's real sharp. He's in a lot of NBA games now. And he's sharp. Deion Thomas, you know, I like to listen to Deion on the radio because he can just make the game. He is so good at getting to the points of the game that, you know, people like me, you know, who watch but obviously never played the game, can make points. And it can actually enlighten your yep. your knowledge or heighten your knowledge of the game, because Deion does such a great job of explaining it, and it's Deion is really good. He's good, and Steven's good. Stephen Bartle is excellent. Kendall Gill's great. We did posters with, this was back in the day when we could do this, with Kenny Battle and with in 1 year. And then the next year we did a poster with Kendall Gill, Sports Star Productions. And we, you know, the only way you could sell them then was is if those guys agreed to personal appearances, and they did. We did four with each one of them. And that's when you really sell the posters, is at those personal appearances. I mean, you have a line that for both of them that never ended. All four times, eight times total we did it. The lines, when the time was up, usually a couple, maybe four hours, you know, you cut it off. The line was never ended. We always left disappointed people, but we just, you know, we just couldn't do anything about it. And there were so many people. That's how popular that 89 team was.
Yeah, I still say that's the best basketball team that Illinois has ever had. And that's with apologies to D and Darren's group, and apologies because I think obviously last year the team got upset, but that team was pretty good. And I also think
they were the
Altenberger, Ephraim Winters, Bruce Douglas team that got beat. They got kind of hosed by Kentucky on the home floor. But those are, if you're asking me from a modern era, those are my top four teams.
And absolutely.
You have one of the self teams, maybe a fifth place, but.
Oh yeah. Bill recruited all those guys that was on that Final Four in 2005. Those are Bill's recruits.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about, and now you also have, and this is kind of interesting, but, and I'm going to ask you about this. Do you have?
Well, good. I'm glad this is interesting because none of the rest of it has been so far. So good. I'm glad to hear that.
Kind of retick try to tick this thing up a little bit. No.
Yeah.
But are you able to are you able to communicate as much with the football team when you cover them? Because it's only 11 games versus 30.
And there's 100 players.
Yep.
Basketball, just because of the small size of the team, which hasn't changed much over the years, whereas football has enlarged. And compared to pro teams, college teams are huge,
right?
Compared to a pro team, so we got close, like Kurt Kittner. You know, we got very close with his family and with his brothers, and we did a photo session with him and his two brothers up in the columns at Memorial Stadium, which their mother just loved. I mean, it was, and it is, it's a terrific set of photos that we did up there. But those are the guys that we really worked with. Sean Wax was one. In fact, he's the one who took the photo of myself and Bill Murray during that 2005 year, which was one of my proudest, because you know Bill's always been a hero of mine, and he spoke to the team when we were up at the Rosemont before the game, and I happened to be in there, and that's when Wax took the photo, and I got that photo back, and we were in St. Louis, and I got to tell you this is a good story. Bill was up about 25 rows up, and down there in the dome, and I saw him up there, and you know, he had people all around him, so. I had a camera and I had that photo with me, and I just bull rushed my way up those stairs, and I get up there to him, and he looks at me and he goes, "Impressive." I said, "Would you sign this?" He said, "Hell, anyone can make it up them stairs. I'll sign anything." He was such a great, that guy, that was great fun to say the least. But you know, I couldn't just go, excuse me. I wouldn't have got up the stairs until the game started.
Right.
I just bowled up there. I don't know how many kids and women I knocked over. A couple men, but I press.
Like you were like the scene from Seinfeld when George had to run over five people to get out of the because he thought there was a fire.
Pretty much.
So that Sugar Bowl team with Kirk Kittner, what was that like? Because I mean, we had had some great teams under Coach Makovic, and then we had had that dead zone for a few years, and then we get back to that Sugar Bowl. Was that team a fun one to cover?
That team was awesome. I had Tony Pasos on it. Two years before that, when we beat Michigan at Michigan, it was basically the same team pretty much. And Josh Whitman was on that team.
Yep. Yep.
So, you know, it was, and for that year of the Sugar Bowl, see, we should have been in the Rose Bowl, but this was back when the Bowl Championship Series had taken over and they only allowed the Rose Bowl one game.
Right.
And
right.
And that was a championship game that year. So we couldn't go out there to play, you know, our regular Big Ten opponent or Pac-10 opponent, because they were hosting the championship. And so we ended up at the Sugar Bowl playing LSU. And I knew that it was going to be a long game. As soon as I saw the security on their horses and when they found out what end zone we were going to go towards in the first quarter right after the flip, they all took their horses down there and they unleashed those poop sacks on the back of them and they just covered our end zone with horse manure. I knew right then this could be a long game. I knew. And then when Brandon Lloyd went up and was interfered with and didn't catch a long pass, which because he was knocked out of bounds, and the official blew the whistle and threw the flag, you know, and I said, well, good, at least they're going to call pass interference. And he did. He said, that's pass interference on the offense. and he took his glasses off. He had to wipe his glasses off before he put them back on. And I'm thinking, man, this could be a long game.
And it was.
And the SEC fans, I got to tell you, they don't get me wrong. I admire their loyalty, but their viciousness as fans is I wish I saw that more often up here at Memorial Stadium, because they are just they are really fans big time. I mean, everything excluded. There, Cassie Arner always said, yeah, the four things the first four words that kid learns down there is sugar bowl, tiger bait. That's the first four words they learn when they're born.
Yeah. Well, we lived down in Georgia for a couple of years.
Uh-huh.
And those SEC football fans, there's no comparison outside of, you know, maybe Ohio State. That's about it.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Yeah. That's, well, you know, when we beat Michigan up there that year, I'll never forget it. Lauren Tate walks across the field. He's got tears streaming down his cheeks. I'm going, wow, this is a big win. And of course, Coach Turner's out. I'm photographing Coach Turner. He says, Jonesy, take photos of the players over there with the few Illinois fans that's in this joint. You know, because out of 105,000, there were maybe 200 something. They were down in that south end zone. So I go do that. And then everyone goes in the locker room. There's only one way in and out of that football field. And that's a ramp, a narrow ramp that both teams have to run in and out of. And you get caught in that ramp when they're coming out, it's like a stampede. Yeah. So you got to kind of watch what you're doing in there and be aware of the surroundings. But I came back out to get a piece of equipment after that was with the team, our team. And it was the weirdest thing because they had the Lloyd car show up on their Jumbotron. They were one of the first ones to have a Jumbotron. And here it was up there. It was starting to rain. And he was talking about the game. And there wasn't one person in those stands. And that was one of the weirdest things I have ever just happened to walk back out into. It was like the Twilight Zone, you know, they just vanished with that loss. And Lloyd Carr wasn't there too much longer after that.
Yeah, it's an interesting stadium too, because
you
go by it and it's low. So mm-hmm. you're like, that's not a football stadium. And then you go in and it's that massive bowl in the ground, and your brain, it takes your brain like a little bit of time to process what you're seeing, because you're used to all that construction above ground.
That's right.
And it's hard to explain that to somebody who's never been there.
Yeah. The first time I went up there years ago, the field had not been lowered yet. And so you had to kneel almost everywhere. And it seems like we always played when they had homecoming, which meant.
Well, that you know what that says about our program, right?
Yeah. The alumni band was there. It was so cramped. So I decided to go over on the other side of the field. And I'm shooting. And all of a sudden, I feel something hit me in the back of the head. And it's a damn grapefruit. And I hear him laughing. I turn around, it's a Michigan band. Someone threw and hit me in the head with a grapefruit, and that juice went down the back of my shirt. And that would be the juiciest grapefruit anybody could find. And I could hear them up there laughing, which I would have been laughing too if I'd have done that. So, and I had to, you know, I had to wear that all the way back to Champaign. And boy, was that ever. Anyway, I never photographed them in front of their band again. We just stayed away from there. But yeah, so they lowered the field after a couple of years, number of years later. So now you could stand, except you could stand in the end zones. You couldn't stand along the sidelines because they still had the alumni band and everybody else in those sidelines. And it was so cramped. You couldn't hardly move from one end to the other and photograph because there was just no room to photograph, you know. And I learned years and years ago that the only way to be a good football photographer, you have to kneel. You know, your pros that do two or three games a week, they all have on these the things on the knees that the carpet layers wear so the knees don't get burnt out. And those guys all wear those, but the good one of those are really expensive. And, you know, and I just use a towel and that worked, but you got to be low in football. You have to be down low and photograph up towards them so you can get a shot at seeing both their eyes, you know, and their face inside those helmets. If you don't, if you try to stand during a football game, you know, you don't get nothing but the top, this part of their helmet, and you can't hardly see their eyes. You don't want that. If they're going for a touchdown, they're going to dive into that. Somehow they're going to end up diving into tackled or thrown or jumped or whatever. You got to be low to get that. No, you might not be able to get out of the way. And, you know, well, at least then you're on national TV when they cart you off on the, in the gator and take you to the ambulance.
So with that team, you know, that team was successful. What kind of relationship did you develop with, you know, Kirk Kittner? Cause he went on to, you know, announce Illini games, and he was one of those guys, had he had some more arm strength, I think he would have, you know, he was the same type of guy as a Tom Brady. Seems like he, you know, did whatever he understood the game, did whatever he needed to do to win. But
smart,
but,
really smart.
Yeah,
really smart.
Any good Kittner moments?
One of the best ones was in the MicronPC.com Bowl, and we went down there, and I forget who we played.
That was Virginia, wasn't it?
Virginia. We beat the hell out of them, and I'll never forget that. Turner puts in a play, and Kurt ends up being the receiver, and he scores a touchdown, and he throws that football into the stands as hard as he could. And, you know, that is a personality, a side of him that I had never seen before. Because, you know, he was quarterback, and he always maintained an even keel, which you have to do, of course, if you're a quarterback, if you're a leader. And he did, except that one time. He just let her rip. He was so, you know, we're playing in Miami where the Dolphins play, and, you know, and it was great. It was terrific. It was a terrific win, and he set the stage in for the next year, of course, but it was great fun. And the MicronPC.com Bowl, I think that's the hardest name they ever came up with for a bowl game, but we won it. It was great. It was, that was fun. Bowl games are always fun. They're a lot of work, but.
What's the work part? Cause obviously as fans, we're thinking, you know, it's a bowl game. How is that different than any other game? So we don't get it.
Oh, well, like every day, no matter what the team does, you know, they have events their schedule go to. At the Rose Bowl, we say we had dinner at a steak place. I forget the name of the steak place, but it was pretty famous, Lowry's. Okay. But it was so you got to photograph all that. You got to photograph as many guys, coaches, you can eating a steak, you know. and you're, you know, you got other media around you too, you know, everyone's kind of jockeying. And, you know, even though I have complete access, if you don't have room to get in somewhere, it doesn't matter. You know, you gotta be sneaky and, or as much as you can be. But any event that they go to things every single day. You know, we had to go.
Okay.
We just had to go. I always had an assistant that went along, and he was always good about doing that stuff too. And then, but that wasn't bad because you find a local lab, you drop the film off, and then you get the pictures, and then you, you know, because all we had then were prints. And right. So you put them up on a board, and then the players could look at them, and then, oh, they could project them as well if they wanted to do that. And of course the coaches wanted all the photos, and then the beach. Now the beach things were always, I always enjoyed the beach stuff. It was good. It was always good. Always made sure it was good. Interesting photos.
Yeah. I guess you really don't think about it, but yeah, that's probably an exhausting schedule. You're out there for a week or 10 days and mm-hmm. you're literally like shooting every 3 hours because they're either at practice or going somewhere and you're trying to.
Right. Now, as long as Kent Brown's the SID, you know, he's really good about making it, you know, so we still have a good time and yet, you know, we still get the work done that he needs. But he knows what he wants, you know, when the day begins. And that's a big help for us because we don't really know for sure. Cause you know, my guys would be out there shooting bikinis all day. I said, fellas, the beach thing ended 3 hours ago. What are you doing here? Oh, she wanted some more photos. I said, she's not with the team, you idiots. So, I mean, I've been doing the same thing probably. Egomaniacs. Yeah. They're, you know, oh, she has such great subject matter. Oh yeah, yeah. She does. Yeah. it's a great subject.
So we had the Sugar Bowl. You know, you had the Flying Illini, which then brings mm-hmm. us up to probably, I didn't think Illinois would have a team that would capture the nation's imagination anywhere near the way the Flying Illini did. And yet D. Brown comes to town, Darren Williams, Luther Head, you know, Bruce Weber, you know, coaching a team that's not his recruits. But mm-hmm. I would argue that he probably did a better job with them maybe than Bill Self would have done.
He might. He was an excellent coach, to say the least. I mean, excellent. And so
what was that team like? I mean, because D. Brown is like a human magnet I've never seen anybody, you know, who's got that charisma. So
D took some of the best photos I've ever taken in basketball by far with his skills. And the talent, and he was just very for me. It just worked out so well, and he was so personable. He was such a great guy to work with. You know, if there was something that photographically that we had to do, he would do it. You know, I mean, he was just really, really good to work with. And that makes it a lot easier. And you have a little more time then to kind of work with those guys. But one thing I learned a long time ago is that when you got those athletes, you know, a lot of people want to talk to them. A lot of people want photos. A lot of people want something from them in the media and of course the university and the coaches. So you got a lot better chance of getting what you want if you know at least approximately how you want to set the look, you know, mm-hmm. how you want it set up. You get all that ready ahead of time and bring them in. And that way you get done. And one of the keys to my success was I could always get the shots done in 7 to 10 minutes with those guys. And that's right. about all you had because they're ready to go. When they come out, they're ready, you know. They got to wait on some idiot to, you know, hook up his lights and cameras. You know, that should all be ready to go before he ever walks out. And to me, that was one of the big keys. The same thing when you're doing a team photo. You got to be ready to go as soon as they get out there. Because those head coaches, like John Makovic, John was basically an Army general. And even though I worked a year under Mike White, I never really got to know him until years later.
Yep.
And but Makovic, he taught me a lot, not only about how to take photographs, but also about business. this guy was, he was a no-nonsense kind of guy. And yes, they were mainly Mike White's recruits, but not all. And, you know, he takes us to 4 bowl games in 4 years. And I just thought that was the norm.
Yeah. Yeah.
I thought that was just normal.
Boy, did we learn.
Woo! You know, I'll never forget the All-American Bowl, that first bowl we went to. And you know, we're in Alabama. And, you know, not only are they serving liquor in the stands, they got down. It's on the field, but it's separated from the field of play. But, you know, they got, not only do they have a bars set up, they've got top shelf liquor in these bars that they've got set up. And I'm thinking, boy, this is an interesting
SEC.
Yeah. And it was a foggy, damp night. I'll never forget. We were ahead. I think it was under a touchdown. And Jeff George, you know, we had the ball and Jeff was doing a masterful job at leading that team and scoring. And then we turned the ball over and it was late in the game. And at that point it was Emmett Smith left,
yep.
Emmett Smith right, Emmett Smith. I'm thinking, who the hell is Emmett Smith? Well,
we learned about that, didn't we?
We learned about that. He played for the Cowboys and won Super Bowls. Boy, he made a believer out of me. You couldn't stop him. You couldn't earlier in the game, you know, I don't know if they didn't go to him as much or if his line wasn't blocking or if, I don't know, but boy, late in that game, he was the guy. And that was a, but the net, you know, then when we played in the Citrus Bowl in 1990, you know, that's when we, you know, we win that game with, as Jeff's the quarterback, Sean Wax is receiver.
Yep.
And those were good teams. Those were, and, you know, and I was the only one shooting with 2 1/4. And really, 2 1/4 is not the greatest to shoot football with. You need those longer lenses. And with Hasselblad, long lenses are, I don't know, $20,000-$30,000. So, you know, I tried to shift over to 35 millimeter, but Mike Pearson came to me and he said, well, Mark, you're going to have to keep shooting with the 2 1/4. I said, well, why? And he goes, well, John likes those 2 1/4 contact sheets because he looked at every photo I took. I said, well, what difference does it make? He says, well, he can look at those contact sheets without wearing his glasses. And he likes that. I said, okay. Okay. I got another story about John if you want to.
Go ahead.
I'll tell you two stories. John wanted his portrait done in his office, which was unusual. Usually it was in the studio, but I said, okay, you know, we're portable. We can do that. So the first time I set it up and I was by myself and I set it up and we shot it and he hated him and he wasn't the easy guy to photograph. So I said, well, I said, I'm going to use a different lighting setup with you. And so I came in there and I knew he liked blondes. So I brought a young lady with me who ran an ad agency and she could talk to John while I'm setting up the lights and getting ready to go. And which worked out great because I needed just a little extra time because it was a tight space.
Yep.
So I get the lights set up and I'm working with the remotes and he says, Mark, how's my tie look? I said, oh, it looks fine, John. He goes, you didn't even look at my tie. You didn't even look at it. How do you know it looks great? I said, okay, let me take a quick look. He says, forget it. I asked you, you said it would look fine and it didn't. And so Dana, what's it look like? So Dana, she adjusts his tie. Oh, there, that's much better, John. Okay, so we take the photos and he likes them, which was unbelievable to me personally, but he liked them. So we're playing USC for the first game of the year. You know, we stay at Newport Beach. Mike Pearson was his first game as SID. And we're out at Newport Beach, which is a really luxurious place to stay. The hotels we're staying in, we're out there a week over Labor Day. And we play USC, I believe, on Labor Day. Keith Jackson, I know, was one of the announcers. And, you know, the game is, I don't know, I forget what this was, a low scoring game, I think. But USC was ahead, and the USC athletic director or president, I happened to hear them on the sidelines. They were discussing where they were going to go to dinner after the victory, and I'm thinking, oh, brother. And by the way, we played that game at they had the Olympics there back in the 30s, I think. I'd have to look. It wasn't the Oakland Coliseum. Is this where the LA Rams play? Oh, I forget.
The Coliseum there in Los Angeles, right?
That's it. Yeah.
Probably the Rose Bowl Coliseum. Isn't that where they play?
Well, it wasn't the Rose Bowl because that's out in
Pasadena.
Right. No, that your one you're talking about is correct.
Okay.
But when we go in there, I knew it was kind of in a blighted section of town, you know?
Yep.
Well, we pull in through one chain link fence with razor wire all around it, and they go through they check the bus, and then we go on through, and then there's another security checkpoint with even higher higher chain link and more razor wire. And now this time they check everybody's ID on the bus, make sure everyone's on there is supposed to be on there, and then they let us through. It was another world. It's the first time I'd really ever seen a city, you know, where there was such an elegant stadium right in the middle of this just blight. I think it was in Watts or something. I'm not real sure.
Right.
But that was a first inkling of this is going to be a weird game. It's a late game. And Jeff George engineers a comeback and we win the game. So we don't leave till the next day late. So we go to Disneyland. The whole team goes to Disneyland. So I photographed the team, and then I'm photographing John and Arlene, and with Disneyland in the background. And John goes, Arlene, this is Mark Jones, and he's the one who took those most recent photos of me. And Arlene goes, Mark, those are the best photos John's ever had taken ever. She says, I don't know how you did, but they're great. John goes, shh, don't tell him that, or he'll raise his price on us. Don't tell him that. And he looks right at me and he goes, enjoy Disneyland. Now, this is the same guy who we're up at a media day up at Illinois. This must have been the next year we're up there. And my mother had passed away the day before, but, you know, in sports, entertainment business, as you well know, the show must go on. So,
yep.
So they couldn't have gotten another photographer if they had to. So I went ahead and went up there. We did the team photo. We did the other things they needed. And then so we were all done. And then so Mike was going to have me take a photo of the sports information staff and him as the SID. And all of a sudden, here comes Makovic coming walking out of the tunnel. And we're at the south end. He walks all the way down to that south end zone. And he walks right by Pearson. He comes right to me. He says, Mark, says, I want to thank you for being here today. He said, I was sorry to hear about your mother. And you didn't really have to come up here today. I would have understood. But I'm glad you were here. And he shakes my hand. He turns around, walks back. And Mike Pearson goes, Jonesy, you're in this staff photo with us here. We're getting one of the students to take the photo. And I'm thinking, you know, this is a world of I kind of like being around as long as I'm the one that, you know, can pull a string every now and then. It's kind of fun.
Yeah, exactly.
Just because of a skill I have with a camera. That's the only reason.
Well, sometimes, you know, it's better to be lucky than good, or better to be good and lucky, maybe.
Yeah, Beth and I were just talking about that today, really, because, you know, when I got this gig, you know, and I was introduced to Kent Brown by his best friend, Chris Boom Boom Helton, and, and Chris says, you know, hey, we can take photos of Illinois if you want to. This is back in 86. He says, I got a buddy of mine, who, you know, he works for Sports Info up there. He's a grad assistant. He said he gets on the field anytime we want. And by God, he did that first game. And that was cool. It was a nice day. And I got a great shot of Minnesota scoring scoring a touchdown. And so later, and I was talking to Tab Bennett, and he said, what'd you think of the photos? He said, well, he said, they're good, but he said, we don't need any photos of Minnesota score. We don't need that. We just need Illinois score. I'm going, aha, that's the difference between this and photojournalism. Okay, now, you know, I was sometimes kind of slow, but I do listen when somebody has a valid point, as he did. And then, I was lucky. I got the opportunity. There's no question about it. But, you know, I could have been drunk as a monkey and not even got the camera out, still been on the field, and none of this would have happened. But instead, you know, you take advantage of those opportunities, and every now and then they work out. And over 30-some years later, you know, Kat and I are friends, have been for many years, you want to keep going as long as you can, but you know, you realize it's a young man's deal. There was one guy from the Sun-Times up there, his name was Ed, Ed, I said, Ed, don't you ever quit. I said, you're older than I am. Don't you ever quit. I'll be the oldest son of a bitch out here. And he goes, I can't quit. I said, you can't. He says, no. He says, I got three ex-wives and I got a kid with each one of them. Said, they're going to work me till the day I die. And I think they did, because one day Ed just never showed up and never saw him again. So who knows? But you meet some interesting characters at sporting events, as you have no doubt. And anyway.
No, you talk like Makovic was kind of the general, you know.
And yeah. Oh,
he knew the business stuff. What was Zook like? Because you got Ron was like, he didn't come across that way. And I never had a chance to talk to him one-on-one. What was that? What was he like?
I was having breakfast. Now, this was after Coach was gone, but I was having breakfast with those two fellows, Gary Davis and Martin O'Donnell,
yep.
When we were on the road. And we got talking about how at breakfast, they used to have two chefs and they would cook omelets. And that's all they did was just cook the omelets. And so Kent and I always got, you know, we always got omelets, everyone did. And then all of a sudden, boom, there was no more chefs. And I was asking these guys, you know, I was wondering what happened to those chefs? Do we get a new nutritionist or something? Because I know we had some bacon that was made out of some kind of vegetables that was really awful. I know we had to eat that sometimes. But and Kerry Davis says, no. He said that Coach Zook got rid of the chefs. I said, why? He says, because he said they made too much noise cooking those omelets.
Wow.
Okay.
Apparently breaking some eggs can be a very loud business.
You know, when you're around those guys and, another, you know, like with Coach Zook, he wanted to get a photo. We're at the Rose Bowl. He wants to get a photo bad of Juice and to show that, you know, that we're in Southern California, we're playing football, and that how beautiful it is out here. So he wanted mountains in the background. Well, the only mountains in the background around there is coastal mountains. You know, they're not your Grand Tetons. I asked Coach, I said, well, where do you want to do these? He goes, I'll just do them around here. I go, well, there aren't any mountains. We'll do it. I said, okay. So we're on our way. I think we were on our way to Universal. And all of a sudden, the bus comes to a screeching halt. And Zook goes, Jonesy, get up here with your camera. I said, okay. So I go up there and he's got Juice. He goes, there's those mountains I want in the background. By God, if there weren't mountains in the background. So we got the photos of Juice, the football, and the mountains in the background. And, you know, 7 to 10 minutes, we're back on the bus heading on the Universal. So Zook knew what he wanted, and he got it.
Yeah, and that's was, not, that's not something people –
he can motivate the players.
Yeah, because that's not something people really think about when you think of Ron Zook. It's a guy who knows – kind of what he wants and how he's going to get it. You know, he doesn't come across that way.
Well, he was fiery. He would get fired up for those games. Like, like, well, he just, nobody, you know, and he got results, you know.
Yeah.
He was a good coach. I'll never forget the time when we were doing the team photo. We used to take it. We took it in the north end zone after we redid that north end zone. And the president of the university at the time, who's not there any longer, he was in the photo. So I lean over to Kent, because I'm up on scaffolding with a 4x5 view camera back in those days. I said, Kent, I said, what's the president of the university doing in our football photo? And Kent goes, well, Coach Zook, you know, heard he was a big Illinois football fan, which he is, and he invited him to come on over and, you know, just jump in the team photo with him. And he did. And he wasn't the first president that Zook had invited over to get in the team photo, but he was the first one who took him up on it. And then we couldn't get him out. So every photo he's in there until Photoshop came along and we could airbrush him out of there. We could, how can you, okay, president, that's enough of you. Can you please leave? And we actually said that one time on the make phone, act like he couldn't hear us. And who's going to tell him? Nobody up there.
Well, yeah, I had no idea. Now, have you had much contact with Coach Bielma over at, you know, he's only been there a year now.
I had a long conversation. Here's the thing I learned really quick. We did the team photo last year, and I was ready. It was in early morning, and I was ready to go at least 15 minutes before the team was scheduled to come out on the field. And usually the team is late coming out on the field, and, you know, and or the coaches are, because they're having meetings or it takes time to get dressed or whatever. Well, I'm glad I was ready, because he came up to me. I guess I was ready more than that, because he came up to me. We chatted. He says, hey, I hear you're the guy down there that's got those hog houses. It's got the numbers on the sides, you know, for the tattooed the number on the sow's ears. You know, Cap, yep. Tell me about that. And I said, yeah. And then you've done this a long time. Yeah, I sure have. He says, we chatted. He said, are you ready to go? And I said, yeah, I'm ready to go. He said, great. So he goes up there, boom. We're done 10 minutes before we were supposed to start. If I hadn't been ready, I mean, all hell would have broke loose.
Yeah, yeah. You know? No, I get the idea that, and this is the thing that you really
Which
don't
is okay
really,
with me.
Yeah, oh, no. You get the idea with Coach B that he's got a checklist of what he's going to do today. He knows when he's going to do it.
Yes.
And you do not want to be the thing that stops that check from going next to the task.
No.
And – because when I met with him, I had, you know, 15 minutes, and he let it stretch to 22. But there was, you know, he knows what he wants to accomplish. He's got a plan on getting it done. And then he goes on to the next thing that he has to get accomplished. You know,
he does. He is sharp. And, you know, he's, you know, it reminds me a lot of the way, you know, when Wisconsin was a team that, you know, Camp Randall was a dump.
Yeah. I miss those days.
Me too. And we could always win up there.
Exactly. They were a W. When I was a kid, they were a surefire W. And so was Northwestern. That was much better.
Oh, yeah.
That was much better.
Much better. Yeah. I mean, it was so bad at Wisconsin. They talk about two ghosts, because it was a Civil War concentration camp for the North. And there were two ghosts there that, you know, one was a female, was always dressed in a nurse's, Civil War nurse's uniform. The other one was just a regular soldier that was dressed in a Civil War uniform. And they'd met, you know, they'd seen him around Camp Randall many times. Many people had seen him. So they put it in their media guide, which is unusual to put a story about ghosts in your media guide. It tells you how bad that the team was.
Yeah.
And then they hire a guy named Barry Alvarez. And everything changes. And this is who this guy reminds me of.
Okay.
Is Barry Alvarez.
Maybe he will be. I lived in Madison, Wisconsin for 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, it was 90 to 95. So I had to watch that horrible football team turn into a monster. And I'm just dreading it, because I'm like, wait a minute. I like Illinois a lot better than this. This is not going to be fun. And if Coach B can do for us what Coach Alvarez did for Wisconsin, there's going to be a big old statue of Coach B that'll be there for about 100 years, you know.
At least.
I'm all for that. Now on the coaching side, you had an opportunity to meet and be good friends with Coach Henson.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. And I'm sure you got, you know, one or two Coach Henson stories. And I think he is the definition. Two things happened to him that I think are regretful. One is I don't think everybody appreciated how good he was while he was still here. No. And then the second thing was because of the frame up of, you know, Bruce Pearl sending in a doctored tape and then Bobby Knight and Digger Phelps, you know, toying around the people at the NCAA, he was denied winning the title that he should have had a shot at. But give us a couple stories about Coach Henson, because he's one that for younger listeners here don't understand what the gentleman coach was.
No.
He kind of epitomized that.
You know, Mary Henson, you know, we still play Missouri in the Brian Wrights game every year in December,
yep.
which we won this year, which was great, of course. And there was one time when, and this is back when we used to play in the Checker Dome, and we got beat. And Lou was not in a very good mood. And so I was talking to Mary Henson after the game, and she goes, "Oh, I just hate to lose this game. I just hate it." I said, "Yeah, it's hard on everybody." And then she goes, "We lose this game, Lou is just a bear over Christmas." Just a bear. I go, "Well, yeah, I bet he is." But one of the best stories about Lou was you know, he was a great coach, a great teacher, and a great recruiter, because that the 89 team had, those guys were all from Illinois.
Yep, exactly.
Which is pretty amazing. I mean, if we had just players from Illinois, the best players, there's no question you could have one of the greatest teams ever. But there's a lot of other people looking for those players too. So,
yeah.
But Coach Henson was the kind of guy who, you know, he'd do anything for you, and he was understanding, and yet he was as firm as a disciplinarian, and he was a good basketball player as well. He certainly knew the game, and he could get his point across to those players, get their attention without swearing, which, you know, is – I have nothing against swearing. Jeez, I do enough of it myself. But he had that state that he just did not swear, and yet he could still get their attention, and he knew what he was doing. I'll never forget when at the Illinois-Indiana game that year, 88-89, when we beat Indiana on Nick Anderson's last second shot. I'll never forget, we're sitting there, and there's not very many of us over there because the place was packed with Indiana fans. And as I got looking back over the photos, well, the Big Ten Network did a story about it. And I got looking at the photos. I noticed I had photos of when Bobby and Lou were talking together before the game, and Bobby was kind of laughing or smiling, and Lou's got his hand up to his mouth, but you can see he's laughing. So whatever Knight was telling him was cracking him up just before the game. And Bobby didn't always talk to very many coaches before a game or afterwards, really.
Right.
But at that time, you know, Lou was starting to bring on good teams, and that's what Bobby respected, of course. And he was defeating Bobby every now and then, and that got Knight's respect. So he, at the end of that game, the crowd is just loud as can be. It's the loudest I'd ever been in. And, you know, it was so loud you couldn't hear the officials' whistles.
Yeah.
So, but I did hear, we were down at the end of the bench, and I heard Lou say, "Take one bounce and shoot it." And I didn't know who he was talking to, but right. obviously it was Nick. And then, of course, Bardo throws the ball in because Bardo was a bullet passer and a genius with figuring out who is going to remain open long enough to get that ball.
Right.
And he threw it to Nick, and Nick takes one bounce, and he nails it. And the place went from bedlam to just quiet. You could hear shuffling of feet as people filed out. The only people screaming were the about 50 of us on the bench area and a few fans and a photographer. And it was one of the eeriest experiences I've ever had. What can silence, you know, I don't know, 14,000 people like that, like Nick did, against an opponent that, you know, you either loved or you hated Bobby Knight.
Right.
No matter what fan of other team you were. And that's the way those coaches were back in those days. Their characters were just as flamboyant and crazy as anything. As I don't think it's quite like that today, but boy, at that time, it sure was. And Knight was the one you always wanted to beat. He was the one, the main guy. You know, he was a ref for, he was the one who got into it with Bobby, Knight. Bobby threw the chair over there in that game.
Yep.
Ted, not Hillary. That was another ref. This was Ted something. Anyway, you can scroll it across the screen. He bumped Ted as Knight walked past him because he threw him out. And Ted never reffed another game in the Big Ten. And the day that Bobby was fired, Ted was reffing a game that night in the Big Ten. So that's how much clout Knight had back in the day. And Ted wasn't too bad of an official. It was mainly, he liked the camera on him a lot, but he wasn't too bad. I haven't seen him for a while, but he was, you got to know them all. Ted Hillary, that was another one. You got to know all the officials because there weren't very many of them. And you got to know them over the years. And some were good. Some you could see Dick Nagy would yell at them.
Well, how was Bill Self? Because he came to town, and I remember in that third season, of course, you knew Bill was the type who would be looking potentially to better his career. I'm not trying to speak ill of him. And I remember telling my dad, we walked into the assembly hall and we're watching a game together. It's 2001. And I remember telling my dad, I'm like, you know, we got to remember this because there's no guarantee we'll get a coach who's as good as Bill Self next. Mm-mm. And I feel the same way about Coach Underwood today. I'm like, you know, you don't mm-hmm. know how long it's going to last. This guy's figured out how to build this program up to really high levels pretty quickly, which means he's going to get the attention of all across the nation.
Sure will.
And so what was Bill Self like?
Bill was the kind of guy that was just, you know, whenever we would do like the coach's photos, we'd always do them over at his house by the pool.
Okay.
He was also always a very accommodating fellow who, and I spent a lot of time with him back in those years. Like I had to shoot a high school football game and it was so cold. And so I was talking to Bill about it because back in those days, there weren't anywhere to change.
Yeah.
And he said, well, just come on over to our house. I said, oh, well, okay, all right. So I'm changing in the bathroom, putting on the long underwear, and the bathroom door comes flying open, and it's Bill. He goes, what the hell are you doing? I said, you invited me. Oh, yeah, you're going to shoot that high school game. I said, yeah. But he was a kind of guy you always felt like he was completely in control of that game, whether he was or not. But
right.
This guy knew, could recruit, and he was a. I saw him not too long ago, and he tells Josh, he goes, "You still got this old guy working for you?" Jeez, Bill, come on, keep that talk down. aren't you the oldest one up here now? I said, yeah. Bill was, there's a lot of stories about Bill. A lot of them I can't tell on the air, but they're good stories. And, but he was just the kind of guy that, you know, whatever it took to win those games, he could, like the famous one is the one that I just started shooting dead zone, you know, we're at Minnesota. And at Minnesota, you can't sit on the end lines because it's an elevated floor and the players could easily, you know, they fall into the photographers. Well, the players don't even get close to the end of that floor because they know they don't want to fall off that floor. Nobody does. But anyway, yep. They put us over on the side and I'm bitching and moaning, you know, I don't like to shoot from the side. Blah, blah, blah. And yet when Frank Williams goes up to take that last second shot with the crowd in the background and, you know, he's in front and he has his back to him. He's going to take that shot. Just looking at the thousands of people's faces in the background as they're all, you know, all Minnesota fans and watching him take that shot, which he hits, and we win the Big Ten Conference. And that was the first time I shot digital part of that game for the first time. And I showed the photo to Bill after the game and, you know, he just said he says, you need to come. Why don't you come over to Channel 3 with me while I do the coaches show? So okay. I want to look at that photo again. I said, okay, sure. Nope. Happy to do it. So, you know, the photo, the camera and everything, it's always been the reason, the excuse, you have to have a job. You have to be able to do it to a point that keep other people from taking your job because right. You keep doing it better and better and better. And you have the skill level. You got to have a skill level too. And that's God given. I firmly believe. And he was just the kind of guy who, and he never forgot you, you know, he remembered me after all those years when we were up at that memorial service up north. And he was a really, you know, one time he came in, we did a quick little photo of him for something he was doing. And so a day or so later, he said, how'd that photo come out? And I showed it to him. I said, Bill, I got to tell you, we need to redo these because this doesn't look very good. And he goes, hey, you can't make chicken salad out of chicken shit, Mark. You know that? I go, well, I know, but I think make a chicken sandwich out of it. I don't know.
Yeah.
So he had words of wisdom like that all the time. Little words of wisdom. I never heard that one before. And I use it a lot. I tell a story. And he was great. You know, he was always a friend to us and his family was, Cindy's wife was great. And they had little kids then. And it was a different time, you know. It was Coach Turner was a basketball football coach, and we had a great relationship with him and his family. You know, we'd be over at their house a lot back in the day. We just, everyone got along. I mean, we all hit it off. And a lot of it had to do with the fact that Doug Green was his director of football operations, Coach Turner's. And, you know, the first time I shot, Doug looks at contact. She says, these are some of the best photos I've ever seen taken of a football game. Well, good. I'm glad. It should be. They better be. I wouldn't expect anything less. And after you show them what you can do and you can do your job, then, you know, you're friends. There's no reason, you know.
Yep.
And that's one thing I do love about sports. Not only that, but the personalities of the human beings that you meet. You wouldn't have met them anywhere else.
Right, right. No, and it is interesting. Now, have you had a chance over the last 5 years to meet and talk with Coach Underwood as well?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And under Coach Underwood, they started to do the NCAA allowed them to do recruiting photos of high school kids that were looking at where to go to college.
Yep.
So the first one I ever did was IO. And so we had the studio lights set up. And he had an entourage with him, you know, several mom and dad, whatever. And so I said, well, okay, I want you to, you know, dribble right towards me and then go past me. And he came at me so fast, faster than anybody I have ever photographed. I thought, my God, he's going to smash me over. He must have thought I said jump over me or something. But no, and then he just darted to the right and his left. And I said, can we do that again? He said, I said, I was a little slow. I didn't expect it that fast. He said, one more time. I said, okay. So we do it one more time. And then we do some family shots. And his mother's looking at these photos. She's going, these are the best family photos we've ever had taken. And I go, well, yeah, they're good. I'm glad to hear that. And after that, I don't know, I got along just great. I mean, you always had the feeling with him that no matter what year he was playing, this could be it. He could be gone the next year for the pros. Yeah. So I was talking to Coach Underwood and Josh at a get together, a Hall of Fame thing, I think. And so I was standing, they were standing there and we got talking. I said, Coach Underwood, I was glad to hear that you got Io. I said, his mother said those are the best photos you'd ever had taken and of the family. And he goes, Josie, I don't want you to think that those photos had anything to do with Io coming to this school, but they didn't hurt anything.
I had a
compliment.
I confused Coach Underwood at one of the first game that I covered, being that I'm not a media guy. I'm like the I'm just the voice of the common man. So the first media game, I show up to cover, we got pizza before the game. Well, after the game, I'm talking to Coach Underwood. He just kind of bumped into me. He doesn't feel good. He's got the flu or something because the whole team was sick. This was back in December. Okay. And so I follow him into the room, and there's like a taco bar. Well, he fixes a couple of tacos. So I'm like, when in Rome.
Well, sure.
I fix a couple of tacos. And Coach Underwood was looking at me with like confusion, but I just think he's too tired and sick to do anything about it. So he sits down for a second and I start talking to him. And I mean, I'm filling up, right? And
might as well. Food's good.
And it was great. Yeah. I have no idea who catered that, but that was great stuff. Mm-hmm. So anyway, and one of the other Illini guys, Kedrick Prince is there and Kedrick gets a taco and he's eating. Well, then the next game, I'm not there anymore. Right. I'm back here to Texas. Kedrick goes in after the game to get some food. And they're all like, no, you don't get food. And he goes, I did last game. And he goes, you're not sitting with Coach Underwood. Get out. So anyway, but as I told that, the guys who were longtime media guys and the Illini guys, they're like, oh God, you ate, you ate the players' food. I'm like, yep.
Well, but Coach Underwood took it every now and then.
Coach Underwood took it with no problem. But like I said, I think he was tired. He was tired.
But then you sat down with him, and so they're going, well, who the hell is that? Well, he sat with the head coach. Well, he must be a friend of his or a relative.
Exactly. Yeah, I don't think I get away with it again, but it was tasty. It was tasty.
You just never know. one thing, this was a couple of years ago, and, Illinois had lost. I think we'd lost four games in a row. And so before the game, they always have these honorary coaches and they go down by the coach's locker room and you photograph them with the head coach, three or four photos. And so they had left. And so I'd said to coach, I said, how you doing, coach? He goes, how am I doing? We just lost four fucking games in a row. How do you think I'm doing? No, I mean, how's your family doing? He goes, oh, they're doing great. Thank you. Appreciate you asking about them. you're amazed every time, really, with the way things happen and with the jobs that they do, which is incredibly difficult, to say the least. It is stressful. I remember they asked Gene Katie one time when he was doing some Big Ten Network commentating. They said, well, what's the difference between this year and last year when you were coaching? He goes, well, I can sleep at night.
Yeah. Yeah. I could only imagine. And then with social media being there, when we were younger, there was always that one guy at the barber shop who would bitch and moan about Coach Hansen, or the guy at the end of the bar that everybody thought was nuts. Well, now that guy's got 15,000 followers, and he's on Twitter, and people actually think he knows what he's talking about. And you're sitting there like, I've actually told coaches before, I'm like, if I were you, I would just hand my Twitter account off to some, college intern, and then I'd let them do all the work on it and post, in these very narrow bands, about sports, et cetera, not negative. I don't know that I'd ever even go out on it if I have to listen to people, and all their ridiculous. I couldn't take it seriously. I know that.
No. And that's one problem with doing that is the fact that they're unedited. Those people are unedited.
Yeah.
If you put something out on the air or in newsprint, you need an editor. I certainly need an editor, to say the least, because that's the only way. Otherwise, you put crap in there that, number one, nobody cares about. And number two, you look like an idiot because you don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
And a good editor will cut that out.
Yeah.
They're making it a little more palpable.
Yeah. No, I'm totally with you. In terms of coaches, the other one that I wanted to ask you about is Coach Weber, who mm-hmm. Again, I always thought he was a very good man. I thought the ability to recruit in the Big Ten was his really only weakness, because I thought he was a heck of a coach, like X's and O's and
absolutely
fundamentals. Man, he was good. I just thought that attracting the big time player was not an easy, it's not an easy task for any human, but wasn't really his cup of tea.
God only makes so many of those tall, big players that are quick and smart.
Yep.
And they usually go to, Alabama, Kentucky,
Duke,
North Carolina. Every now and then we get, the Big Ten will get some, and we have had our right now. Kofi is one of the best centers I've ever seen play up here.
Oh yeah, he's clearly
he's such
the best
a nice
Illinois
kid.
Ever had. Yep,
and he's always smiling after he just in that Missouri game when I photographed. When I photographed him, and I thought in the photos, it looks like he's going up for a jump shot that's maybe 5 feet away from the basket, but, or 10 feet away, but he's not. He's dunking the ball. That's how far out he starts. And then just wham, go, wow. That's fun.
Yeah.
That's fun to photograph. Yeah. That's good. That's, I enjoy that. We win easily. That was great. This is a fun team to watch for me. Personally, I know that they're a little frustrating sometimes for coach, but when you're dealing with this age of athlete, geez, that's got to be a frustrating experience, and you got to get their attention. And Coach Underwood can get their attention big time, and so could Bruce, he could too. But Coach Underwood is he's a redhead and he's a fiery guy, and he knows how to coach. He knows how to recruit. And he also knows, like in the last game, when the officials are doing a lousy job, because that's the first one he's been ejected from.
Yeah. Yeah.
At Illinois. So
no, actually, I think it was the first one in his career.
He was right, of course. I think that's right. Yeah, I think you're right. I think that's exactly right. I think it was.
This is Mike Kegley, and I'd like to thank you for listening to our two-part series talking to Mark Jones, the official Illini photographer. He has done an incredible job. We probably could have done two or three more episodes. There were so many fun stories, but we just wanted to scratch the surface on the offerings that he has given us. And of course, when you look back at your memories of the Illini, particularly as you go back in time, so many of them were really framed by his pictures and what he was able to get. And then that was out there for us to memorialize over the years. So a big thanks to Mark Jones for being willing to sit down a couple of times and talk about it. And we wanted to hold off on publishing it until we got done with all of the excitement of the transfer portal and some of the recruiting that was going on in the springtime. And certainly if you enjoyed it, you know, share it with your friends. There's a lot of fun memories there. If you enjoyed what you heard, of course, you can go to IlliniGuys.com and you can subscribe. You get the first 6 days to see if you like it. The seventh day, you get a $99 bill and you're good to go. Realistically speaking, if you are going to try it, please click on the message boards or the forums, depending on where you're at in the website. That will take you back to a basketball discussion, a football discussion, and in other sports discussions. In those discussions is where we can put things in to the discussions that maybe we don't have someone who's willing to put their name on as a source. So it couldn't be a story, but it's really good. And that way you kind of learn about things before they happen, or you got an idea of what might be happening before it gets there. So we have a ton of members who go out there and they read the message boards or they talk back and forth. It's part of belonging to a great community. I would highly suggest people do that. And of course, you can listen to Eye on the Illini. That is the podcast that's hosted by myself or Larry. And additionally, you can listen to Sturdy for 30. That's Brad's podcast. And KED has KED's Recruiting Roundup. That's Kedrick Prince. So there's quite a few podcasts that you can listen to keep up on what's going on with the Illini. Additionally, when you take a look at things, you can go, and this is what we're very proud of as well, go to IlliniGuys.com, hit the radio button, like radio, turn it up, radio. And if you hit that button, you'll be able to see where the Illini Guys Sports Spectacular is. That's our weekly 2-hour sports extravaganza every weekend. And you can see the city, what day it's on, what station it's on, and what time it's being broadcast. We'd love to have you listen to that as well. So thank you so much. And thanks again to Mark Jones. Everybody have a fantastic day.